This is the Late Round Podcast with your host, JJ Zacharisa. JJ Zacharisa.
What's up, everyone? It's JJ Zacharyson, the editor-in-chief at FanDuel and at NumberFire.com, and this is episode 176 of the Late Round Podcast, one of the many shows that are part of the NumberFire Podcast Network. Thanks for tuning in. I wanted to address something that I think has been misinterpreted a bit, and it has to do with Aaron Jones, Kerryon Johnson, and any other running back who seems to be far outperforming his teammates while not seeing enough playing time. There's a really interesting balance to take with this in fantasy football. We need to first recognize that coaches have all the power with running backs in fantasy. Maybe not all, but a lot of it. If they decide to not utilize a particular runner close to the end zone, or if they want that runner to be in a full-blown committee, then that running back becomes a lot less valuable in fantasy football. And it's all by choice. Even if there's a consensus feeling that one player is far superior as a player than the rest of the guys in his backfield, that still might not matter. If Mike McCarthy thinks Jamal Williams offers just as much on a football field as Aaron Jones, then Aaron Jones loses a ton of fantasy appeal. And that's what's happened so far in 2018. Now, where I struggle with this is that my take on the running back position in real football is that they're not that important. So if they're not that important, it shouldn't matter who's running the ball. But I do think there's validity to looking at talent as it relates to fantasy football, because your hope is that talent wins out. In other words, coaches don't believe running backs are as unimportant as I do. And for what it's worth, I do think they matter to a degree. But teams and coaches think they matter more than I do. And since that's the case, I do want to worry about talent, because rational coaching would then utilize that talent. And that's not really happening in certain instances across the league. Let's just look at Green Bay specifically. Aaron Jones has an absurd success rate. Analysts across the Packers world know that he's the most gifted runner on the team, and numbers absolutely say that he is as well. Mike McCarthy then comes out this week and says, quote, "I think it's very obvious the balance we're seeking from our running back position. I think it's one of the strengths that we've had since Aaron's come back. We have three young men that we believe in and three guys that contribute." And then he goes on to say, "But there's more to playing the position than just running the football. There's more to playing the position than just running the football." I think that we would all agree with that, right? One of those additional things is pass protection. Jamal Williams has been looked at as the best running back pass blocker on that team, and he is. But here's where I struggle with the pass protection arguments. Is the payoff actually there? Is the difference between Jamal Williams to Aaron Jones or Ty Montgomery so significant from a pass blocking standpoint that it's worth sacrificing efficiency when the ball is in the running back's hands? What's the true impact of a good pass blocker to an average one? To me, we probably overstate it. According to Pat Forman of Pro Football Focus, the Packers asked their running backs to pass block only 2 times this past Sunday. Realistically, in negative game scripts, that's not the core function of a running back. It's not to pass block. It's to catch passes and make plays. And with the evidence that we have, Aaron Jones is the player who should have the ball in his hands in order to gain yards for the Packers. Maybe Ty Montgomery, but definitely not Jamal Williams. So when you see tweets from me or another fantasy analyst or another football analyst talking about Mike McCarthy's irrational coaching, this is why. Aaron Jones has one of the highest success rates in football over the last 2 years at the running back position. Aaron Jones has been nothing but unbelievably efficient. To not give Aaron Jones the ball is irrational coaching. Maybe it wouldn't make a huge impact in real football because running backs aren't that vital to team success, but if coaches are attempting to be optimal at every position, I have a hard time thinking Jamal Williams is the optimal choice for Green Bay. He can pass block, sure, but he's also forced 1 missed tackle on 60 total touches, according to Pro Football Focus. Aaron Jones has forced 11 on 28. Williams has a 43% success rate. Aaron Jones has a 63% success rate. And Jones hasn't caught a pass this year that wasn't deemed a success via NumberFire's expected points model. So yes, I'm going to keep saying that Aaron Jones should be on the field more because he deserves to be on the field more. Do I think it's going to drastically change the Packers' offense? No, I don't. Do I think it's the smartest thing for a coach who believes running backs are important? Absolutely. But my thoughts are not the end all. I think the majority of people would probably agree with me, but the Packers coaching staff is what's going to either make Aaron Jones a thing in fantasy football or not make him a thing in fantasy football. But if that happens, if the Packers decide they want to feature Aaron Jones, watch out. He could do some damage in fantasy football. Anyway, as I talked about last week, we've got a weekly free play over on FanDuel for late round podcast listeners where prizes include FanDuel points and NumberFire premium subscriptions. Last week's winner was MikeW522 after using James Conner, the Bengals defense, TJ Yeldon, and Adam Thielen. So So nice job, Mike W. For this week's contest, visit FanDuel.com/league/JJ to join. That's FanDuel.com/league/JJ. This first question's from @ShenFling2. Breeze's numbers weren't that great for him with two good fantasy running backs last year. If two running backs is going to happen again, like everyone says, can we expect his passing numbers to go down? Does something have to give? So I'm really glad this question was asked because it was something that I talked a lot about over the offseason, so I've sort of got a foundation for an answer already. Last year, the real reason Breeze's numbers were low wasn't simply because they were utilizing two running backs. They did run the ball a lot more than the typical New Orleans offense with Sean Payton and Drew Breeze, but they also had a 1-to-1 passing touchdown to rushing touchdown ratio. That's not very common, especially in today's NFL. Of the teams that have had that type of ratio over the last 7 seasons, we saw an increase of 1.3 in ratio the following year, meaning New Orleans was likely to throw more passing touchdowns than they did last year, as long as they maintained a similar overall touchdown total. And that's really just regression. Last season, Drew Brees had a touchdown rate of 4.3%. His career average is 5.3%. There were signs of him improving in the touchdown column this year, even if the Saints were as run-heavy. But let's not forget that New Orleans' defense wasn't bad last year. And to start the season, this year, that secondary has not looked the same. And that's forced them to be a little bit more pass-heavy. And actually, even in neutral game scripts, the Saints have the 5th highest pass-to-rush ratio in the entire NFL. So the short answer to your question is that no, Drew Brees' numbers should not drastically drop simply because of Mark Ingram. But that does lead me to the next question. This one's from @SteveKibler2. The Kamara question. How much regression? PPR scoring worth Juju and Howard in a trade? So first off, no, I probably would not be making that trade. But second, I was blown away by the overreaction to Kamara's workload in week 5. I tweeted some of the trades that people were making to acquire him, and they were absolutely ridiculous. It was one game. It was one game before a bye week when Mark Ingram had fresh legs and Alvin Kamara had been on the injury report with a knee injury. To me, Kamara is still an RB1 in fantasy football. There's really no reason to believe that his workload will be any lower than it was last year. In fact, we should probably think the opposite, because Kamara only had a 31% rushing share last season after Adrian Peterson left the Saints. He saw 19% of New Orleans targets, and I think that can continue this season as well. Up through this week, his target share has been almost 27%. So regression is coming, yes. He's not going to maintain the same market share numbers as he did from weeks 1 through 4. And he's not going to be as efficient as he was last year on both a per-yard basis as well as a touchdown-scoring one. But I would expect Kamara's rushing share to be higher this year than last year, and if we see him with a similar target share, he should still see more overall targets than we saw him with last year because the Saints are more pass-heavy. And remember, volume through the air for running backs is more important than volume on the ground. All in all, this is not unexpected. Maybe the Week 5 game was a little unexpected because his workload really, really sucked, but we knew Mark Ingram would have a role when he wasn't suspended. And we also knew that overall regression was coming for Alvin Kamara. But like I talked about and wrote about this summer, that didn't mean he wasn't worthy of being a top 5 pick in fantasy football. Increased volume through the air and on the ground is going to help combat that regression. This next question is from @ZombieToken. Can we just get a temperature check from you on James Conner? Bell says he's coming back during the bye, but no one on the team has actually talked to him. Now Ben is saying that Connor should still get work even if and when Bell returns. And then there's the Eagles rumor, etc. Thanks. Like I've said throughout this Le'Veon Bell journey, you guys know just as much as I do. I know it's crappy for a fantasy analyst with a mic in front of him to say that, but I'm not going to mislead you guys just for a talking point. The truth is, we don't know. No one really knows. I can guess, but it's not going to be as strong of a guess as what a typical forecast for a player would be. But my guess is that Bell does report when he says he's reporting. And James Conner still gets some work, but it won't be enough to warrant anything more than a bye week fill-in type of play. That's my guess. But I'm trying to predict something that's been wildly unpredictable so far. And the biggest issue with this is that the market value on these guys is going to be drastically different from league to league. If a league mate is willing to get rid of them for bench players, then sure, go for it. If you're moving significant pieces for those backs, though, then I'd question the logic behind it. That's where my head's at with it right now. This next question is from @ChickForWhat. Hey JJ, what are your deciding factors when assessing matchup / opportunity / offensive efficiency? For example, between Eric Ebron and Jared Cook, The Jets are first and Seattle is fifth versus tight ends. Both lead their teams in target share, but Indy has 46 more pass attempts than Oakland. I lean Ebron on volume. Yeah, so this sort of plays into the big debate that's happening on social media these days about how much matchups actually matter in fantasy football. I'm of the belief that they do matter, but they might matter less than what the consensus believes. So to this point, I'm far more concerned about the individual offense and how a player is being utilized in that offense. I'm still concerned about the matchup, but you need that volume and usage baseline first and foremost. With Cook and Ebron, both guys are seeing volume and both guys are being utilized in the scoring area. So in that case, it's a true toss-up when you realize that variance exists. If you want to use something like fantasy points against in a small sample size to tight ends as the tiebreaker, then sure, go for it. But the bottom line is that offensive situation and volume is the most important thing in fantasy football. The matchup is important, but it's secondary. But over the offseason, I may dig more into the importance of matchups in fantasy football and see what I can uncover. This next question is from @Tampa2Tone. What exactly is a flex play? So many players are touted as RB3/flex or WR4/flex each week. Why not just refer to them as their positional tier ranking alone and separately refer to them as flex play if the situation warrants it? Yeah, I mean, this is a fair question. I generally refer to flex plays as WR3s and RB3s because I'm under the assumption that your lineup has two running backs and two wide receivers. But I could see how the definition would vary from analyst to analyst. It's sort of an easy way of saying, this guy probably doesn't belong in your lineup, but there's a chance that he has a decent day. But I personally do my best to not just say flex and provide what I really mean, like RB3 or WR3. This next question is from @TossCarly. By listening to your pods, I feel like a team of Dalton, Landry, Keenan, Boyd, Zeke, Howard, White, Cook, and Reed is very strong. But I'm not scoring a lot weekly. I don't know how to approach trying to make a trade since most of my guys have strong schedules ahead. Is patience the answer? So depending on your league size, I don't think there's a whole lot wrong with that team. You're just getting hit with touchdown variance. Keenan Allen and Jarvis Landry are both buys right now. Jordan Howard obviously has just had some struggles, and Zeke has been more of a high floor play rather than a high ceiling play. I don't think this is a bad team if this is a 12-team league team. So you just gotta be patient. This next question is from @KingMTheFirst. How do you decide when to use a waiver on a defense or a kicker? In general, how valuable are early waiver positions? So if you've got a waiver system where you keep your waiver spot week in and week out if you don't use it, then you should not be using it on a defense or a kicker. You should save it for something more significant. Now, if it resets each week, then you just have to list your waiver choices by importance. I'll almost always side with a wide receiver or a running back before a streamer in that case. I'm rarely giving tons of love to kickers and defenses on the waiver wire. So hopefully that helps. This next question is from @DreamAssembler. What's the ceiling for Kiki Cutie this year? It feels like people devalue him because Fuller broke out first and people assume whoever breaks out first will always have more value. What are your thoughts? Could Cutie become the number two over Fuller and be a wide receiver two in fantasy football? Thanks. Well, to be fair, Fuller broke out first because he's been in the league longer. Kiki Cutie is a rookie. I think Cutie is really good too. He's someone who ranked pretty high in my prospect model, and the fit is perfect because the Texans don't really have a slot guy. And I haven't talked about this anywhere, but I do worry about what Cutie's presence will do to Will Fuller. Just look at the difference with and without Cutie this year. In weeks 2 and 3, Fuller saw 20 targets and about a 28% target share in Houston's offense. That's why I had him as a buy in 15 transactions. In weeks 4 and 5, the 2 weeks with Kiki Cutie, he's seen just 8 targets for a 9% share. Now, Fuller didn't play a good chunk of their game against the Colts. I totally get it. But even if we prorate his workload, he's still not close to his 28% share that he saw during weeks 2 and 3. The two players do very different things for that offense. Cutie could demand a higher target share just given his role, but Fuller can stretch the field. He's a big play waiting to happen. So they both can be fantasy relevant, but I didn't foresee Kiki Cutie having such an impact so soon. I certainly don't hate it because he ranked pretty high in my model, but I definitely didn't think that it would happen right away. But it's happening. And in PPR formats, it wouldn't shock me if he outscores Will Fuller rest of season. I would still take Will Fuller, but man, Kiki Cutie has looked really good during these first 2 weeks that he's played this year. This next question is from @ColeBacon. Will Marlon Mack sabotage some of Nyheim Hines' value since they are both scat backs? Which Colts running back has the highest upside rest of season? From what I've read on the situation, when Marlon Mack returns, he's going to be the main back in Indy's offense. Or he's at least going to be taking on a lot of volume on the ground. But Hines is more of a natural pass catcher, and he's proven to be strong in that area this season. So it would make sense to utilize him as such when needed. So in other words, in negative game scripts. And since those scripts can and probably will happen fairly often for Indianapolis this year, Nyheim Hines still will have value in PPR formats this year, even when Marlon Mack returns. That's going to do it for today's show, though. Thanks to everyone for listening. If you've yet to subscribe to the Late Round Podcast, make sure you are by searching for it on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, TuneIn, and Stitcher. And make sure you're following me on Twitter as well, at LateRoundQB. Thanks, everyone. Enjoy your weekend, and good luck in Week 6.